You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Monday, April 4th. Our topic today is reskilling, for lack of a better term, or training and retraining the workforce of, I guess you could say the future, but it might also be the not too far off present. We have a new emerging economy potentially underway that will be powered by renewable energy, and instead of some of the older fossil fuel energy that we've been used to. And that will provide some opportunities and work possibilities for the workforce of the very near future. And the question is, do we have those people in the pipeline in terms of being trained or retrained to fill those positions that might be created by, let's say, solar installations or perhaps servicing and maintaining electric vehicles? So with us today to talk about issues around that, we're really pleased to have with us today Bill LeBerge, who's the owner of and CEO of Grassroots Solar, based just up the road in Dorset, Vermont. Bill, thank you for making the time for this.
Thank you for having me.
We're also pleased to have with us today Joanne Coons, who is an adjunct professor at Hudson Valley Community College and who moderated a discussion by SolarFest earlier this year, back in January, around a very similar topic. So Joanne, a very, very happy to have you along with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And another member of that panel that SolarFest held back in January is also with us. Josh Robin is the co-founder of Cornish Technologies and also the chair of the EV and Autonomous Program at Hudson Valley Community College. Josh, thank you for making the time for this conversation as well.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, just to kind of get us started here, I guess I just wondered if I could throw this out to all three of you and have you comment on what you all see as the sort of the big picture of the worker shortage for this emerging green economy for, basic green energy jobs like solar installation or weatherization, electricians of all stripes, it seems like. Are we in a reasonable position to kind of move forward and fill those jobs, or is this going to be problematic, to put it mildly? And Bill, let me start with you. What are you seeing as the owner of a solar company that is right on the cutting edge of all of this? What are you seeing in terms of workforce availability?
Well, I can tell you that what I'm seeing is that that we have some challenges. The idea that we need to ramp up very quickly has been recognized certainly by the state of Vermont with a lot of the climate legislation that's been moving forward. I don't think the response to needing that workforce is necessarily moving as rapidly. What has happened is we're entering into an era of disruption, and we transportation is no longer transportation. Transportation is a technology. Heating our houses isn't a matter of just burning some fuel. It's more of a technology. So We have challenges ahead of us. I do think we also, you use the word opportunity, and I would say that we have opportunities in front of us. So obviously in Vermont, we don't have a case where we have coal miners that we can retrain, but we certainly have energy companies. There are a lot of fuel companies out there that have technicians. Can we train them as heat pump installers? Is that another opportunity for these fuel companies to actually become literally energy companies? And I think you're starting to see that. I think that we need to be able to provide training. Again, the state of Vermont is about to put into place a bunch of incentives to weatherize your homes. We need installers for that. To put in heat pumps, we need installers for those. as we switch to electric vehicles. You know, that's a different car, you know, that has to be worked on. It needs less repairs, fortunately, but it's a different style of repairs. So I do think that as we shift, and it certainly seems like the Vermont in particular, and certainly the Northeast, is heading towards some climate change mitigation efforts. I do think that the challenge is to be able to make that switch in the workforce as quickly as we need to.
Okay, and Joanne, over to you. What's your sense of that?
Well, I usually go with a lot of data stuff, so I just wanted to throw some data out, which numbers verbally produced or presented don't always stick in your mind. But I am from New York State, and I'll use that as a basis, but it applies across the country. In the next 10 years, we're going to see 189,000 new job openings. Actually, new jobs. There's going to be 211 new jobs, but 22,000 of those are going to come in from displaced workers. So that's retraining. So gas stations are going to be about one-third of that for retraining. They're really going to be hit hard in this evolution. We have a goal in New York State to install 2 million heat pumps by 2030. If you do the math, that means we have to install 548 heat pumps each day between now and 2030. I think we can pretty obviously see we don't have that workforce yet. I've been told by manufacturers we can supply the equipment, so that shortage shouldn't be really the problem. It's really the people to implement and put them in and install them. So far in 2022, I guess it's a quarterly report, we've seen a 38% growth in green jobs. That's pretty hefty. So you can see where the dial is going. It's in that direction. I did want to define green jobs as renewable energy, because we have solar and EVs represented here today, but you know, it encompasses other areas as well. Water management, solid waste management, e-waste management, and green construction. So those are where the jobs directions are going to be in all those fields. I'm kind of big on solar because that's what I do, but you know, got to look at the other fields as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right, and Josh, over to you. What's your take on this whole situation?
It's definitely a situation. When you look at this thing that we call electrification, you're looking at all these individualized projects that you have a significant amount of planning that needs to go into. So it's not just you're looking at an increase in engineers doing site work. You're looking at people reviewing those plans at the utility level. You're looking at companies that need to provide the materials and to distribute those materials for those projects. When you're looking at converting the current workforce over to these projects, if you're looking at, say, like an automotive technician, that conversion over to an electric vehicle is fairly simple. But what we're the big elephant in the room is our electrical supply and the infrastructure that we need to support all of these things. And that's what we're looking at. We're looking at this need for all of these people that have a specialized knowledge group, which surrounds some sort of ECM background. There's obviously some automotive background, electrical planning. We need more people. We just need more people.
Well, as I walk around just about any town I happen to go through, I see help wanted signs all over the place, and not just for green energy jobs, but for all kinds of jobs. I guess I just wondered, where are these workers going to come from who are trained to to be either solar installers or electric vehicle mechanics or whatever it may be? Are trade schools or vocational school programs kind of gearing up to kind of meet this demand? Or, why is it that it seems like we have this problem in the first place, where schools in general just sort of not tuned in to what was likely to come, or what are your thoughts on why it is we have such a gap?
I think it starts in elementary school. I think we are not educated in the new technologies and such, but I'm really glad we have the internet, because I believe a lot of people learn more from the internet than they do about these things in school. So there are resources. We just, the students have to be motivated to look into them. Not that we shouldn't be doing this at school.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with this. I can tell you that trade schools are starting to recognize that this is very important. They're looking at their current curriculum. They're looking at their current programs. Everything takes time to convert something over. You're looking at a year to 2 years to get curriculum developed and approved. And that's a very quick timeline, by the way. So the education system has to make these, they have to adopt pretty quickly. The earlier that we can get awareness and eyes on these tracks for employment, the better. So absolutely high school, middle school, everybody needs to start looking at, the way that they interact with their ecosystem in a completely new way. We're interacting with electricity very differently, and it's only going to grow. So it's very important that we do have that education and awareness. You're also going to see in the, for these different startups and these companies, they're going to have to start training people in-house. For a new company that's looking to develop electric vehicles, electric trucks, all these companies, they are building their own in-house education system, if you will, which is a significantly more robust program than just, like a packet or a couple of webinars. There is an awareness that there's a need for this education. It's trying to fill that gap as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I agree with both of them. I think that, again, I get back to the opportunity discussion. The way that our students are being trained right now is not geared towards the technology that we're bringing along with us. I noticed that when I do an advertisement for whether it's someone in sales or an installer, I would say about a third of the respondents say, "Where can I go for training?" Typically we prefer that there be, that you have some skills. We'd like to know that you've done some solar installations or electrical background or roofing. And a lot of people say, where can I go for skills? So we need to fill that void. I do think we are starting to see more of the schools, the trade schools offering, after school classes. There does seem to be some reskilling available. I know that Vermont has, as part of their climate legislation, has really gearing towards workforce development. I'm on the board of SolarFest, and one thing that we've been doing, SolarFest for 25 years has been offering workshops on mostly geared towards people who are interested in doing it themselves or putting it in their house or just about the technology in general. And as we have found a permanent home now in Brandon, Vermont, we're really going to focus on also being a place where we can have a training station, where people can come and learn how to do off-grid solar, learn how to do grid-tied solar, learn how to do hemp houses, a bunch of different types of trainings. And rather than it being just on a weekend festival, try and make it available throughout the year. And Solar Energy International is a big educator. And as Joanne said, thank you for the internet. You can access basic training and then more advanced training online. We want to take that same type of training and make it available in person as well, because a lot of people learn. I can tell you, half of my crew, we have to certify on various equipment that we're installing, and half of my crew doesn't mind sitting through video training. The other half says, I need to feel it. I need to do the hands-on. I need to be on the roof. I need to plug the wires in. And so I think that we need to be able to fill that vacuum and have a place where people can, you know, they don't have to travel to Colorado for Solar Energy International training. They can do it in different locations. So I think that's where we need to focus on.
And it seems like a lot of these jobs, electricians is one that comes to mind most quickly, are very well paying. I mean, the salary levels that I'm seeing make me think, man, if I was like 18 or 19 again and I'd become an electrician instead of going to college. Is that salary base beginning to attract more people into some of these fields, or is it still kind of a struggle to kind of interest, you know, like folks that might have gone to college 10 or 15 years ago to go into a more of a vocational program?
Well, I can't really speak to that because I'm not hiring people, but I always tell or recommend students that they follow their heart. Find something you're passionate about and the money will follow. They have to like what they're doing, number one, for longevity. But why don't you guys answer that one, because you're more into the hiring end than I am. I just prep them.
I would say that it is very difficult trying to allure people into this field right now. The largest area that you'll find growing right now in the green energy sector is sales and consulting. And that's really just because you have all these new companies that are trying to sell products. They have very high capital spends to get themselves started, and they need to sell their hardware and they need to sell their software. So right now, there's that very big push to get people to buy these products, whether they're, you know, digital or analog. And then from there, it's, you know, everything works in stages. When you're able to sell somebody one of these products, then it's like, okay, we have to now look at the infrastructure. And then that goes into the project management area. And then from there, that goes into the installation area. So you know, how do you get somebody excited about the idea of being an electrician outside of the fact that it's a very high paying job? Maybe that's the magic question. How do you get people excited about these things? I don't know. I think it's cool. I'm excited about it. But once again, I think to Joanne's point, I think starting this conversation as early as possible in this school system and getting awareness and visibility to this is so important.
Yeah, we need a Fauci factor here in the renewables.
I guess so. I guess I was just wondering, do all of you see any signs, and Joanne, maybe let me throw this one your way, that companies that are currently, let's say, in the fuel distribution business, to go back to your point about gas stations earlier, do you see any signs that many of them are going, this may not be a viable business 10 or 20 years down the road if, a new way of doing things actually does take shape? Maybe we should start thinking about how we become a solar installer, for instance, and go into competition with Mr. LaBerge here. Or is it the case where there's just, you're seeing more signs of pushback and resistance, like, no. This is what we've been doing for three generations, 100 years. This is what we know how to do. And there'll always be a demand for home heating oil. Any signs that you're seeing that some companies are beginning to, like, say, you know, it's time for us to migrate into the future, or not so much?
That's a tough one. I see both sides of the fence on that one. I had a quote I wrote down, but I'll just try to, it's Darwin, you know, those who change will survive. It's, you know, evolve or die. And not everyone buys into that particular theory. But history shows it's pretty reliable. So, are they doing it? I can't speak to that point. I see new gas stations being built from scratch. I'm like, I don't see, you know, personally, I don't get it. And I do see some models that are very successful, like some convenience stores installing charge stations, and they know that that's good for their business. So it's 50-50, I guess, at this point. I don't have a good handle on, are they doing it? So maybe you gentlemen could answer that one a little bit better. I'm just going by my observation. I don't have data on that.
Well, I have anecdotal evidence when I take my, you know, we've had a Nissan Leaf for, we're on our third one, 13 years into it. And when we initially started bringing our Leaf to our mechanic, we bring our Leaf to our mechanic to put our snow tires on and to take them off. I mean, the amount of maintenance on these things is nearly zero. While you're putting the snow tires on, check the brakes. And so the mechanic would, you know, first few times we take it, like, oh, this is kind of cool. He goes, I know this thing's going to put me out of business, but do you mind if I test drive it after I put the tires on? I'm like, of course. You know, so he can see he's not going to do any oil changes. He's not going to do any mufflers. You know, there's no transmission to work on. So that chain goes down, you know, to the parts department. Guess what? We don't need any more oil filters. You know, we don't need a store to sell the oil filters. So it seems to me that, and if you want to call it Darwin or a business or whatever, if you don't change, you know, if all of a sudden your customers no longer need transmissions, you need to change the way you do business or what you're doing. So that's one sort of anecdotal evidence just from talking to my mechanic. The other thing I would say is that I have always thought, so we typically do the solar installation and or batteries, and then we usually bring in a master electrician to do the grid interconnection. And so we've always talked about, well, you know, are these electricians going to, you know, just start installing solar and you know, put us out of business? They don't want to go up on a roof. You cannot get an electrician to get up on a roof. So we figure we're safe that way. We just have to find people who are, you know, who don't mind getting up on a roof and doing that. But I do think that, you know, all of these businesses are going to have to adapt. You know, the first time I took our Leaf in for an inspection, you know, the Department of Motor Vehicles just barely had a new way to, because typically they have to plug into an app with an iPad that plugs you into the Department of Motor Vehicles, and you go through the checklist, and there was no place to check the emissions on the car because there are no emissions. And so it's like, wait, how does this work? So it's a learning curve for everybody, you know, as we make this transition. I would think that, as Joanne said, you're gonna have to adapt if you want to keep your business viable.
Yeah, because I find myself wondering, you know, I had a similar conversation with my mechanic not so long ago, Bill, when I took my, you know, regular plain old gas-powered car, internal combustion engine driven, and we got talking about electric vehicles, and, you know, he's an older guy. He hadn't had any training on how to service electric vehicles. Not that apparently there's very much that apparently needs to be done, but, you know, basically he found himself thinking, well, you know, this is going to put me out of business if I don't adapt to it in some way. And I find myself wondering, you know, what the social and cultural implications of that all are. I mean, we saw 40 years ago when the globalization of the economy began to happen, a lot of businesses and factories and manufacturing operations moved overseas, that it was a real, a lot of people went through a very difficult time adjusting to that. And I find myself wondering if we're going to revisit that in some way, if more companies aren't forced to kind of adapt, or if they aren't willing to do so by themselves, if they will see more people thrown out of work or how that plays out.
One thing I think we need to mention is equity here. I mean, it's the lower income that has to be brought along, and they weren't done very well. We just need to do that because it's not fair. So we really need to focus that there's equity in renewables, that everybody has the right to their electrons being powered by solar as opposed to, you know, a fossil fuel source, et cetera. And that's policy, I believe. So that has to be paid attention to as well here. That's just, you know, the way I see it. I really get a little worried about the privilege that seem to be able to buy the new electric vehicles and the new this and the new that. I don't want to price it out of range for John Q. Public, because it's important for global climate change to bring them along too and make sure that they have electrification in their homes?
A lot of the legislation that Vermont is putting through right now with the Global Warming Solutions Act is really geared towards the transportation sector, the heating sector, and access. And so they're starting to see a lot more. So now we've gone through several Nissan Leafs in my household. There's a couple of them that are available, available now at a greatly reduced price, so now they're going to be doing incentives, not just to purchase a new EV, but also a used one. So the price of a used EV comes way down. You know, now it doesn't have the 265-mile range, that you might be looking for. But if you're living in Rutland, Vermont, and you work there and it's your commuting car, this can be a very reasonably priced vehicle. And then the other part of it is access to charging. So when, there's a bunch of money that's coming down the pike federally and statewide towards electric vehicle infrastructure, charging infrastructure, with a big focus on rental units, multifamily dwellings, because I can have one at my on the garage at my house. What if I live in an apartment in downtown Rutland? So really trying to figure out that as well. And I'm interested to see, how they implement that. I think that's going to be the tricky part.
Well, I just to kind of further this point here, I work with fleets, I work with schools, and the capital spend that's needed to convert a internal combustion engine fleet over to a battery electric fleet is cost prohibitive for everyone. So it's not just low income, underprivileged areas. You're looking at everybody across the board has a very large expense. And even with incentives, I mean, like, let's face it, an incentive still comes out of our pocket. It just comes out of our pocket, not at the same time. It's a little bit delayed. So the expense is still there. And everybody has to have this expense very soon, especially with legislation. Here in New York, our legislation follows California's legislation. And if you've looked at what you have currently and what's in the pipeline, it's very aggressive. So everybody is going to have to do this, and everybody's going to be competing for those electrons. And just to circle back really quick, when we're looking at business transition and we're looking at disruption, I'm more concerned about those dealerships than I am about gas stations. Gas stations, you got somebody in the bodega. Bodega usually does very well. As far as the pumps, you've got somebody transporting the fuel to those locations with a trucker shortage. That guy's just going someplace else. So those people are okay. But at a dealership where you have all of those technicians that maybe you don't need all of them, maybe you don't need all those people in the parts department, maybe you don't need all those salespeople, you're looking at a business, you're looking at close to 17,000 businesses across the United States that employ 50 plus people that are going to be reducing their staff by how much. There's all these little things that you don't really think about that are going to be impacting those. I recently wrote an article for Fixed Ops, which goes to all these dealerships about how to maintain your revenue through those level two home chargers. Businesses are going to have to figure out, how do I maintain my level of revenue, so I can continue to employ all of these people? This hits everybody in the green industry, and it hits everybody outside of the green industry.
Hmm. What do you all see as the sort of the timeline of all this? I mean, I hear, like in Vermont, we have a process whereby we're going to try and lower carbon emissions by what sounds like very aggressive amounts by 2025, 2030, by 2050. It makes it seem to me, but you all know more about this than I do, that, boy, the time to begin all this was about 5 or 10 or 20 years ago. And all of a sudden, if we're serious about meeting some of these targets, things need to start changing rather radically, very quickly. Is that Is that accurate, or do we still have the luxury of a little more time to kind of sort through all of that and sort of make this transition relatively painlessly? Okay, Josh, you're laughing, so you must be thinking,
Well, I was laughing because everybody started shaking their head no. At this point, when we talk about clean energy, when we talk about the environment, to me, like, we won. Everybody's on the same page. We need to do better for the environment, and we need to do that rapidly. What it comes down to is, how do we do this the fastest way possible in the most economically viable way that's intelligent, that reduces taxpayer-funded entities? That's it. That's the biggest thing right now. What's the smartest thing that we can do as fast as possible? That's it.
Yeah, and I would say, if you see the reports even that just came out today, the UN says, I mean, this might be our last chance here. So you are right. It's absolutely imperative that we do this. I will say that we have done major transformations before. We used to drive horse and buggies, and we switched to this thing called the internal combustion engine. And everyone said, no, it's going to be too noisy. It's going to kill people. It's going to go too fast. It's going to be messy. They were right on every single one of those. But we made that switch because it brought us horsepower into our language. So now we've got these things. And what we have is, we don't have a cord anymore. We've got these battery things that we can use. And so that empowers us to be able to do all these technologies that we're talking about. So yeah, we have to do it now. We have to do it 10 years ago. But if we can't do it 10 years ago, then we need to do it now. Do I think that we have the political will? I don't know. I live in Vermont, so I've got a rosy disposition, but not confident necessarily for the rest, the entirety of our country. We just have to plug ahead, keep plugging away and go as fast as we can.
Now, it comes down to a lot of personal choices. Vote with your dollar. What can you do in your own circle? You can't control what other people do. It's a little frustrating to watch at times, but the power of example is better than words. And so how we lead as government or, agencies and organizations really can make a big difference on the trickle-down effect. So I think those things are all very important.
And I will say that one thing that triggers people is when gas goes over $4 a gallon. And it happened, 2008, whenever it was, and you saw Hummers all over the place. And then all of a sudden, gas went up to $4.50. They disappeared. There wasn't a Hummer to be seen. And then we got kind of lackadaisical, and we got back to, $2 a gallon gas. And I can tell you right now, our phone is ringing off the hook from people who have heard about, our energy grid is in trouble. I want to get electric cars. I mean, I would say 3 out of 5 calls we're getting right now are, we're getting an electric car. We want solar to power them. So, honestly, people will react. If our gasoline price stays high, then you're going to see a serious switch over like that.
And bringing the equity thing in, the people that are buying these things now, they're just going to make it more affordable for the other people in a year. The more people buy this stuff, the cheaper it's going to be. So it's great to support anything with renewables at this point. It's going to make it better for the next person. And now, the other thing I wanted to say about that equity thing was, where are we putting our money? Who are we subsidizing? Can we rearrange those subsidies to subsidize the transition? And those are the tough decisions that policymakers have to make. They probably won't be popular with their lobbyists, but they got to make the right moral decision.
I wanted to ask you, and to sort of build a bit on the point Bill was making there just a moment ago about the price of gas. Obviously, right now we have this very tragic situation unfolding in Ukraine, which beyond the human cost has also placed a great strain on energy sources. And it's been fascinating to see how that sort of is the ripple effects of that just expand worldwide almost, and not just with energy, but with food items as well. And never realized that Ukraine exported so much wheat, for instance. But apparently a lot of countries in the Middle East in particular rely very much on that. But I, you know, I found myself kind of intrigued to watch, for instance, our diplomats go to Venezuela and sort of urge the Venezuelans. A couple of years ago, we were being highly critical of for their, you know, human rights abuses to drill more oil. And we've been beseeching the Saudi Arabia to drill more oil. And then we've been trying to get as much natural gas online as possible to replace the Russian natural gas that's been sanctioned. Do you see this situation as being an opportunity to speed up a transition to green energy? It would seem like a perfect opportunity to do that. Or is it going to have the reverse effect and kind of make people say, hey, you know, we need to drill more oil wells wherever we can. And if they're in a national park, well, that's just too bad. Any thoughts on how you see this situation perhaps, you know, having an impact on that?
Well, for as many examples you gave of how we are thinking about drilling more and importing more, I think there's just as many of renewables being promoted, because that is a really good long-term sustainable solution. And there are some smart people in this world that realize that. So I also think there's a psychological factor here. We now are just so disgusted with the Russians and what they are doing that we associate fossil fuels with the Russian. So fossil fuel, bad. Renewables, good. So I'm hoping that that will have an impact as well as what direction people will be taking forthcoming.
Yeah, we're getting calls from customers saying, Bill, with all this stuff that's going on in the world, I need to know that I have resilient energy. You know, price up some solar and a battery. We need to know that when you know what hits the fan, then we can still keep operating. So, you know, people definitely see what's going on. They're reacting to it. You know, again, you know, when gas goes over $4 a gallon, to me, that just triggers people. You know, the cost of heating oil, you know, it's what we always do is we talk to people about, you know, their total energy consumption. It's not just what they use to turn their lights on and turn on their tea kettle. What do you use to heat your house? How do you dry? You know, all your total energy consumption, and can you put that on the electric side, and can you power that with renewable energy? And that's a conversation we have with every single one of our customers. And typically, they're calling us, and I would say 6 months ago, they would call and say, you know, we want to get rid of our electric bill. Now they're leading the discussion and saying, yeah, but we also want to get an electric car, and we're tired of using, you know, fossil fuels to heat our house. So we're not the ones that are driving that conversation now. I mean, we make sure that everyone has that conversation, but I would say, you know, probably half of our customers are the ones starting the conversation that way.
Yeah. I would say that there's a lot of ways to look at this. Obviously, being energy independent is very important, and anything that we can do in-house is going to be better for us. You have to look at this in a long-term strategy. And, you know, Penn State recently, I think it was about 2.5 months ago, came out with a study that said, anticipate over the next 10 years, scheduled rolling blackouts for everybody in the United States, 8 to 12 days of not having air conditioning during the summer because of this. And that's just exclusively because of the strain that we're going to put on the grid. If you converted every appliance in your kitchen over to gasoline, I think we're all aware that the cost of gasoline would go up. So while we are moving away as fast as we can from fossil fuels into electrical energy, we need to be increasing the production and supply and distribution of that so that our cost of energy does not equal or become greater than what our current fueling costs are. And a very big way to do that is your microgrids. We need to make sure that we're keeping local money local. And, you know, I talk to clients that have They're working with a local company that's outsourcing one group that's working in another state who is working with another company that's getting materials from another company. And it's that, you know, why are you purchasing something that has to cross an ocean when you could purchase it here in the United States? There's so many levels that you have to look at. And as long as you can find solutions and encourage people to produce what's needed as close to you as possible, the cheaper it's going to be, the more people you're going to have employed, and the more stability you're going to have in your ecosystem, which is so important right now. I think we're going to see a rise. Actually, to be honest with you, I think we're going to see a huge rise in tidal energy. I think solar is going to continue to be huge. We all see the value in that. Most people live on the coastline, and that tide does this 24 hours a day. I think that's going to be a big thing for us. But yeah, I can talk about this for hours.
Yeah, well, and I would jump on what Josh was just saying. I think that he brought up the 800-pound gorilla in the room that we haven't really talked a lot about, Andrew, and that is the grid modernization aspect of it. You know, I liked his description of the need for resilient microgrids, you know, because that's the way we're going to have stability. I know Vermont is trying to head towards that. But I think that, you know, this, if we're going to electrify our transportation sector and our heating sector, you know, we have, we're running on a, you know, 100-year-old wiring system that, you know, was put in a different era. So now everything's going bidirectional. You know, now we have our solar's kicking into the grid, and pretty soon we're going to have, you know, your car battery is going to be bidirectional. So you'll be able to run your house off of your car as well. So there's a lot of modernization that has to take place. And I think one thing that's really crucial in that is, I remember when we first got our electric car, and as a first adopter, you bump into a lot of people who are very wary of, and they said, yeah, well, we heard that electric cars are coal cars because they run off of, you know, electricity powered by coal, which is true if you live in Ohio or wherever, you know. So, you know, I can point to the solar panels on my roof and say, no, this is, you know, running off of a clean supply of energy. So I love the idea of the tidal. I mean, as we modernize and increase our ability to electrify our lives, we need to have clean production and supply of electricity.
Well, before we have to run, I just wanted to throw or kind of loop back to kind of the starting point of our conversation today, and that's around the whole reskilling idea of the workforce. I guess I just wondered, you know, what's the most important thing we could do? And Joanne, perhaps I'll throw this one your way first, to encourage more, let's say, high school age students to say, hey, you know, I could make a really good living as an electrician or a solar installer or a wind turbine installer even. All these other jobs. What's the most effective way you think we can encourage more younger folks or folks who are somewhat younger than I am, for instance, to either switch careers or start off in a field that would lend itself to these emerging green technologies?
Give them the experience. They'll be sold.
In other words, have them go out and with Bill and install some solar panels somewhere or something like that?
A demo, you know, safe, not up on a roof necessarily. You know, have them put a harness on. That's just fun. They just think it's so cool. And teach them, you know, I was going to suggest too, some things that most employers are looking for and are lacking are soft skills, math skills, and soft skills. Like just teamwork and being able to be critical thinkers, et cetera. So give them those things, but that's not going to jive them up. You got to get them on site. Like, go see a wind turbine. My God, it's like, oh man, I'm scared of heights. They need to know that up front. Or I'd love to be up there. And now you got somebody who's going to work towards that goal, but they're going to be jived up because they've seen it and they really want to do it. So I think that's the best way to expose people to it.
Yeah, we're working with a couple other solar installers in the area and a local high school, and trying to implement a program where we have the students do an energy audit on their building. What would it mean to bring in heat pumps? Let's do the math. How many kilowatt hours is it going to be? Okay, how much solar do we need? And again, I'd come back to this. We can show them the app that says, oh, wow, we put this up and look how many, it tells you what your house is using right now. If you go turn those off, oh, wow, look, it just went down this much. So the blue line went up, but the green one went up, you know, and so they can see it in real life applications, and they can understand that the math isn't just a bunch of numbers. It's actually, when you turn that toaster on, that's X number of kilowatt hours. So I do think that, you know, that those skills just, you know, in, you know, here we are working with them. I think that helps a lot. And that's really what we need to do.
And Josh, you get the last word.
Last word. I think schools is an obvious thing. I think another really, really powerful area is with the municipalities. I think that having your local community engage with itself, whether it's through local events, whether it's through the infrastructure, collaborating with incubators, collaborating with startups, with local businesses, getting that visibility and that engagement is so critical, because that doesn't just touch on, you know, our future workforce. It hits our current workforce. You know, I can tell you that there are so many people right now. I mean, once we look at those unemployment numbers, which is very hard to kind of read because we had this crazy pandemic that kind of skewed how we're looking at all these things and how people are evaluating where they are in their lives. But having your local transit system starting to look differently, seeing these boxes pop up all over the place to charge your vehicle, having different businesses welcoming you in, that's a huge, huge area of opportunity. And it's also going to help everybody in the long run, because the more education that your municipality has in how to engage with these new, you know, this new ecosystem, ideally, the lower the capital expenses are, the lower the tax dollars are going to be, the easier it is for people to engage.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. That's an excellent point that you made, though, because it reminded me that the starting point of this, the whole idea for this conversation was an electric vehicle event that was held in Manchester last September, where I ran into Bill's wife, Lisa, and we got into a long conversation about reskilling and how hard it was to find qualified solar technicians. So your point about events, municipalities, I think is a good one. And I guess a good place for us to leave this conversation today. I want to thank again all three of you for making the time for the conversation. Joanne Coons of Hudson Valley Community College, Josh Robin, also of Hudson Valley Community College, and Bill LaBerge of Grassroots Solar. Thank you all very much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
And thanks to all of you who have been with us today watching it. I hope you found our program interesting, and well, we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.